it's a time of year where I'm going to make sure to keep my finger near the mute button so that you don't hear in case I start sneezing, because as the weather begins to turn a little bit warmer here and there, allergy season is not far behind.
You got the sniffles, Will? Are you irritated your sinuses?
Yeah. Hopefully, yeah. All that kind of stuff.
Podcast performance.
Yes, I don't intend to let it get me down, but it is simultaneously, you know, making my mouth dry and then making me sneeze a lot more and all this wonderful stuff. You know, it seems that
Speaking of which, I just mentioned something. This whole podcasting thing. I hear it's sweeping the nation. I hear it's the next big thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've heard that everybody and their dog, they love podcasts. You know, everybody's listening to what's it? I was gonna say like the Ira Glass one, Everyday Invisible or whatever that's called. Everybody's listening to. I'm trying to think. What's the most normy podcast ever? The Daily, Joe Rogan. I don't know.
This is a really good question, because this episode of Elwood City Limits, the episodic Arthur podcast, is going to be very self-reflexive. We're going to be talking a lot about podcasts, the most normie podcast. I feel like what about like Office Ladies?
Oh, that's probably pretty popular. Yeah. I really don't know. I have a pretty insular kind of podcast palette these days. This is interesting, though, Will. You know, everybody loves movies about Hollywood. Today, we're making a podcast. Yeah, some people are really getting sick of it. I bet that in just a little bit. But there's lots of movies about movie making. Today, we're going to be venturing into podcasting about podcasts, which is kind of an interesting territory to be in.
Yeah.
Through the looking glass we are.
Yeah, really. This was not to get ahead of ourselves in talking about it, but this was a weird episode of Arthur to behold, because, well, yeah, I don't want to get into the whole conversation just yet. In fact, there's very little keeping us from that, because we don't have any emails this week. ElwoodCityLimits@gmail.com if you want to send in your correspondence. I do want to quickly mention, though, Lucas, finally, I was able to get you your part of Ross's gift to us,
yes.
The listener who gave us a Christmas present. And so I was able to, they were all conveniently mail slot sized. So
yes.
I was able to get them all through. And
thank you very much, Ross. I will be using the PlayStation gift card to purchase WWE 2K24.
There you go.
And also, the Pop-Tarts were a nice touch. Did we talk about Pop-Tarts on the show or something?
I think the relation is Boston cream pie and how that comes back to Arthur.
Oh, I see. So they're Boston cream Pop-Tarts.
Boston cream donut Pop-Tarts.
Ah, I see. Thank you so much, Ross. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's not often we get a gift like that. The mailbag, that's awesome.
Yes, very much appreciated anytime that any of our lovely fans give us a gift. And it's always appreciated when our patrons gift us with their patronage. And we want to say thank you to those patrons right now. Patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. Of course, those patrons have access to our latest episode of ECL Origins, where we talked about the amazing world of Gumball. Really fun episode to record. Those patrons include such people as Light Relentless and Teresa, Kevin Noon and Shayna Bennett, people like Matt and Andrew Power. Andrew Power, who's got his webcomic going to be coming back once again. So Scary Mask on Instagram and Tumblr. Check that out. Allison Archambeau and Sydney Long and Bob Yee. People like Jay Wags and Americana Dream. People like Cecil Robinson and Chloe. People like Scott Ripley and Tiki Barber Fan. People like Zara and Blendy. And also people like Stanley Fryman and many more. Thank you for supporting us on patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. This is Arthur Season 20. We are well into it now. And it's time for a Fern episode. It's been a little while since we've had Focus on Fern, who, in case you're a bit newer to the show or haven't made your way through the considerable backlog, Fern is something of a favorite character of ours. We really like her, although I think that sometimes her episodes really range in quality department. She's had some really good ones. She's had some bad ones, too. So Fern's Flights of Fancy is the episode we're talking about today, and it's about Fern as a writer, which is a good start. I think that's always a good thing to a good character trait of Fern's to emphasize. So we start here with Fern learning about a story contest for young writers being happening in the Elwood City Times, and the winner is going to get their story published in the Sunday Arts section, which Fern feels could be a bit of a big break for her. In fact, her imagination gets away with her a little bit. She starts thinking about the book that will come of this. She imagines publishing a book at a book signing event. The book is called Portrait of the Aardvark as a Young Man. And there's a line outside the bookstore to get the book signed. And Lucas, this is interesting. We've had some stories recently of people going to Mark Brown signings, but Mark Brown going to a signing?
That's right. We get an appearance from the one and only MB himself. Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, Mark Brown has a very gifted voice. What a vocal performer. It's so distinct and calming. You know, I would read a long-form novel narrated by Mark Brown. I feel like it's been a while since we've had those kind of after-the-show PBS insets where it's kind of Mark Brown showing us how to draw Arthur. Such a great, distinct voice.
It's very interesting you say that. I mean, it didn't strike me as much, but maybe I'll have to go back and listen a little bit. It is very, very like soft in a good way. When we've had those segments where he's teaching us how to draw Arthur characters, he's very comfortable in front of the camera and has a nice authorly voice, the kind you would want reading an Arthur book to you, which I'm sure he's done many, many times at signings and kids' events and etc. But this is something that we mentioned in last week's episode. Mark Brown's character model is going to be showing up. I just didn't expect him to be fully voiced here. And Fern even, he's you know, can you sign it to Mark Brown, he says. And Fern gives a little, like, what did you say, look? And it's like, okay, we all know what this is. So, Mark is, of course, in this world, the Arthur TV show is made by Matt Damon. Mark Brown is just a dude, as far as the kids know. But there seems to be some recognition in Fern's eyes that maybe this exists outside of some kind of reality here. So Fern prepares to put her story into the contest here. This part where Fern is reading her story, she's reading it to George, who is dressed as Inspector Bastings because he's expecting to play detective with Fern's Detective Watteau. But Fern decides to read him the full story. So in essence, the story that Fern writes is about an old man who feeds the birds in a park. He has a very special relationship with them, but his niece takes him to live with her and then sells his house and keeps him inside away from the birds. And then finally, the old man finds a way to escape, and the birds carry him away to a better place. It's a little bit like the Pigeon Man episode of Hey Arnold. Speaking of, like, first of all, Mark Brown, big surprise. This segment of the episode, this is like a good 4, maybe 5 minutes of this episode. And this is Fern narrating her story as we see it play out here. The story is drawn in an entirely different style than Arthur. Because sometimes in Arthur episodes, we will have characters narrate stories and it's like, oh, it's the Arthur characters doing a fairy tale or something like that. This is an entirely original story that she creates with human characters, and the style of illustration and the character designs are completely different from Arthur. They're very rounded, and the word I used was expressionist, in a way. It's hard to explain. I'd love for you to take a crack at it here, Lucas, but it looks really good.
It reminds me, well, it's interesting. And I know, everybody, I promised last week we'd keep the new animation talk to a minimum. But it's a really interesting exercise here because they're using the new animation software, which I've already forgotten the name of, Toon something. Not Flash.
Toon Boom.
Toon Boom. How could I forget? And what's interesting is when, you know, Arthur has, you have to retain the character designs. And so Arthur, unlike other shows, it's more apparent to see the seams of whatever animation their style they're using that's not hand-drawn, because you always have that reference point of the hand-drawn episodes from the first few seasons. And because they're having to adapt these characters to new animation softwares, we could always really tell the differences. It's really apparent.
Yeah.
Here, where they're not beholden by old character designs, this little animation looks really sharp. It looks really slick. And you don't see the kind of puppetry you kind of see with the Toon Boon Arthur episodes. And so it makes me wonder, you know, all this criticism that especially I've been laying at the feet of Flash and Toon Boom.
Mm-hmm.
Are their hands kind of tied because, you know, there's this mandate to use these new technologies, but the problem is we have this older point of comparison with early Arthur. Whereas, you know, this original animation, there's no point of a comparison, and it looks great. It looks great, and it's totally distinct. When you were saying, you know, how would you describe it? It actually reminds me of some of the other more modern episodes of PBS shows we've watched. It's a little bit more storybook looking than something like a Word Girl, but with the big outlines and stuff and the way some of the characters looked, it kind of reminded me of Word Girl a little bit.
Yeah.
Even more kind of storybook like, a little bit more illustrated.
That's a really good comparison.
But yeah, it was totally slick. And like you said, you know, we were talking about this is finally a Fern episode. It's actually secretly a This Old Man episode, because this is the majority of the episode is this story within the story, which I think is great. We've seen a lot of episodes of Arthur, Will. And especially as of late, we're like, okay, yeah, they're doing like a remix of this story they've told before. Even the next episode we're about to talk about, this might be construed as a remix on a story they've done in the past. So when they do something like this, which is, as far as Arthur gets, almost experimental, I relish it. You know, as a kid, I probably would be like, what the heck? Where's Arthur? This sucks. I want to see Arthur. As a kid, I probably would have actually hated this.
Mm-hmm.
But as an adult who has to talk about Arthur every week, and I say that with love, I am delighted by anything that's super different or you know, kind of breaks the formula. So this was an absolute delight. And, you know, where this was going, I thought it was going to be kind of saccharine and overly sweet and sentimental for my liking.
Right. Yeah.
Not really. It's pretty... When that old man is in, you know, applesauce prison, it gets pretty dark. I was impressed by the kind of emotional weight that Fern's story carries.
Yeah, it's there are elements to it that remind me of Up, the Pixar movie. I mentioned the Pigeon Man episode of Hey Arnold. It's a little bit of that. And then the illustration style is, it feels like a lot of very, like, it feels like a comic that I've read before. Not something specific, but just like something very personal and, you know, cartoony, but realistically cartoony. I don't know, it's really hard to describe, but I would definitely recommend, I'm sure if you're listening to this, to us talk about this, that you either have watched or will watch this episode. But if you're somebody who doesn't watch the episodes, take time to watch this one, and specifically this part here, just for how different it is. And this is another example, and I think this happened in the previous seasons when we weren't as high on the animation style, or, as you said, Lucas, when we look at shows that are natively in a Flash or Toon Boom environment that start there versus Arthur, which started much, much before that, you really see this tool being able to use to its full potential without all the baggage from what we expect Arthur to look like. And I really thought this was great. Like, it's super cool. And you're right, it has the potential to be sentimental, and it is a little bit, but it's not like schmaltzy, which is funny because Fern actually doesn't win this contest. She loses the contest to Beulah McInerney, who is a character that we have named before, recently. It's the little cat girl, the redhead cat girl with square glasses. That's like a permanent background character in the third grade. And Fern's critique of Beulah McInerney's story is really funny and reminded me of the ways that I'm very catty when it's like just me and my wife at home, because Beulah McInerney wrote wrote a piece called Nine Reasons I Love My Grandpa. And Fern says, that's not even a story. It's a list. She's really salty about it. And I loved that read from her. But this loss gets to Fern so much. She's so upset because obviously she put a lot of work into it, into her story, and it turned out really well. And so she just decides to give up writing forever and explore other activities like sports. So she decides to go full on into the soccer team, which she's a part of. But George, who we see here, is closer friends with Fern than maybe we even realized before. Of course, they do the Watteau and Bastings thing together. But this at least lays a little bit more groundwork of like them being particularly close friends, which I think is a great match. George is trying to encourage Fern to submit the story elsewhere, but she admits that when she found out that she lost, she totally destroyed it. She ripped it up, and even if she wanted to submit it, she physically can't. George goes to talk to Harry Mills, who is, of course, working at the paper, and he admits that he, of the three judges for the contest, he was the one who voted for Fern's story, but it was the other two who didn't. We also see another thing here. We've seen this a couple of times in Arthur. He's surfing Woohoo, which is the Arthur version of Yahoo.
Harry Mills is such a, you know, the adult characters are always really fun because the writers get an opportunity to write someone who is not in elementary school. And, you know, classic adult characters like Mr. Haney are always just really good, kind of, they always make me chuckle throughout right. the episodes. That's some of the most memorable characters in Arthur are some of the adults. It's been so strange to see Harry Mills kind of develop as this kind of ever-present character on Arthur, because, you know, it feels like just yesterday he was Buster's mom's boyfriend.
Yeah.
And now it's like, he's kind of, I mean, he's pretty encouraging towards Fern's writing in this scene, but he's almost like there's a tinge of villainy with Henry Mills where it's like the way he's laid back on his desk, his feet kicked up. He's like, yeah, you know, I voted for it, but what can you do? You know, I get the sense that he really doesn't give, you know, he has no care in a world. I don't know. Henry Mills is like this very like adult character in this world of kids. And so whenever the kids interact with him, it's like, what, did George make an appointment with him? Like, was Harry Mills his, like, secretary dropping appointment with George in his Microsoft Teams calendar? What was he looking up on Woohoo, you know?
What's his search history? Yeah, it's funny you say that because, you know, for the past couple of seasons, we've been noticing that they've been introducing new characters to Arthur, and then they seemingly rarely get seen again, whereas Harry Mills, like you say, has been around for quite a while and then will just turn up, and his relation to the characters is kind of thin. Like, he's not dating Bitsy anymore. He has no relation to Buster other than they're like friendly still, but it's just like sometimes he's just a utility guy for if we want to talk to somebody at the newspaper and we don't want to talk to Bitsy, I guess. So, yeah, now that you mention it, it is funny that he's still around. So George, after doing this legwork, he decides that he's going to take Fern's story, the shreds of paper, out of the garbage. And he being so good with construction and all this sort of thing, he is going to reassemble it with tape and glue, essentially. And then once he does that, he convinces Francine to publish it in the Frensky Star. Fern is not, of course, not terribly athletic. She's not doing well with trying to adapt to being a sports person. She has this daydream where she becomes like a Mario Strikers level soccer player. Like, she kicks the ball so hard it gets like a flame trail. But then it's like, oh, it's because it turns out that she's secretly a machine. So even though she's given up writing forever, she can't stop daydreaming and imagining stories. And it's just something that's too much a part of her. It's funny that this, we're talking about this episode. Like, I literally had this happen recently with one of probably my biggest interest with professional wrestling, and like, I was just kind of, well, I wasn't feeling too good about it. And I was just like, I'm sick of this. I want to do other things. And then, like, after that weekend, I was like back to wrestling again because I wanted to. And it's hard when you have something that either you're good at or you really like to go completely cold turkey, especially when you don't really mean it. You're just discouraged in this case. Fern gets a copy of the Frensky Star, a rare Saturday edition, and sees that her story was published. And she figures out immediately that it was George, which, she's a really good detective. It makes sense. She's initially very angry, but as she makes her way to George's house, Arthur and Buster and Muffy compliment her on how good the story is. In fact, Muffy has a great line here. One word for you, movie rights. I'm thinking Matt Damon as the old man. So we're still getting a lot of worth out of Matt Damon as a former cameo. And
oh, yeah, and Buster has a great line where he talks about how he thinks that the story is kind of not literary, but instead it's true events, because he talks about how he's been saying birds could talk for years, but nobody listened to him.
Mm-hmm. So Fern, yeah, like I say, is initially angry at George, and I think that she has reason to be. It is, if there's one problem I have with this episode, it's just that George did this behind Fern's back without her permission. And that's, yeah, you know, like in real life, that's, I don't think that's cool, even though it ended up being okay. And Fern goes over to his house, but it's to sign a copy of the Frensky Star for George. And they seem to be quite close friends. And I appreciate seeing this beyond the Watteau and Bastings lens, I suppose. And now a word from us kids. We continue the writing theme. This kid, this class, probably around second or third grade, have a writing challenge. And so they're all writing limericks. Now, what I was surprised with here, Lucas, is that they describe what a limerick is. And it's surprisingly detailed. I'm impressed, actually. Like, if you were to ask me before watching this, like, what is a limerick? I'd be like, it's a type of poem. And that's about all I got. But these kids give us, the name comes from Ireland, like the Limerick part of Ireland. And then they even break it down like it's an AABBA structure. Like, okay, man, I feel like I learned something here.
Also, the presentation of this Word From Us Kids segment, I feel like the production values of Words From Us Kids have always been on the rise. Like, it's retained kind of the hand-drawn kind of aesthetic of early Word From Us Kids. But there's some really just great presentation set dressing with the way this is animated, like animating what looks like a marker on a whiteboard. And just the editing of the interviews with the kids. It's for something that's essentially going to a classroom with a camera and sticking it in kids' faces and being like, explain this concept you just learned. They make it very engaging with the way it's put together presentation wise.
One of the groups of kids, also one of them, the first one, couldn't find anything to rhyme with bunny except for Balleny on the globe, which I looked it up. It's the Balleny Islands in Antarctica. So I didn't realize bunny could be so difficult to rhyme. Supporting this podcast is how it keeps going, and it's very easy to do. So here's how you can do that. If you're listening to this show and want to get the full back catalog of Elwood City Limits and all of its sister shows and offshoots, you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and even more services. You can also go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/ElwoodCityLimits, for the full back catalog. If we aren't on a service you use, please let us know. You can interact with us on social media. We're on Twitter, at ECL Podcast. Podcast, Instagram at Elwood City Limits, and twitch.tv/ElwoodCityLimitsPod for our occasional streams. We're also on Facebook and Tumblr. Feel free to reach out to us on social media, or you can email us, and your email might be read on the show, ElwoodCityLimits@gmail.com. Finally, for exclusive content including entire side series like For the Kids, a PBS Kids podcast, and ECL Origins, subscribe to us for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. That's all for now. Thanks a lot for listening, and now back to the show.
And now back to Arthur.
But okay, we're talking about podcasts. We're talking about podcasts about podcasts. So let's talk about the episode Serial. Now, we're going to get into the podcast part of this very, very soon. Don't worry. We got to lay the track here.
We didn't have any mail this week. I want to use this extra time. We were talking about what podcasts do quote unquote normies listen to.
Yes.
What have you been listening to lately, Will? We're podcasters. Do you ever kind of double dip and listen to something else?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, mine's kind of a boring answer because I used to be really, really into podcasts. And not to say that I'm not. Obviously, I'm still making one and I still listen. But typically, the podcasts I listen to are like classic wrestling reviews and stuff like that. So I really like the Attitude Era podcast. That's probably my number one. There's a total nonstop action wrestling retro podcast called You've Got to Be Kidding Me. There's a Ring of Honor classic one called Through the Years. I like podcasts with Michael Hobbs, so I like Maintenance Phase and If Books Could Kill. That's two that I listen to with my wife, and and then like maybe one-offs here and there. So like maybe I'll listen to an episode of You're Wrong About or something like that. But that's usually the niche that I stick to. What about you, Lucas?
So as always, not to dominate with wrestling talk, but I always listening to Wrestling Observer Live with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez.
Classic.
Which I pay quite a premium to listen to, but that's how it goes. And my new podcast obsession, a podcast I've grown to love, is the Bay Street Video Podcast, which is a podcast put on by these people that work at Toronto's biggest kind of physical media store. And they basically talk about every week, they talk about all the new Blu-rays that week, which is kind of a hyper nerdy thing I love to listen to. You know, does this have slip covers? Does it not have a slip cover? You know, what are the special features on these Blu-rays? So that's a podcast that I'm always super excited to listen to whenever there's a new episode. And then finally, my favorite like comedy podcast is Podcast About List, which referenced sometimes on this show. And I think they're kind of all the comedy podcasts, I've listened to many over the years, I would describe Podcast About List as the most avant-garde. And they're really kind of breaking new ground in the genre of Gen Z podcast humor. Right now, they're doing their 5 weeks of war, Will, where every week they're covering a new war in their personal lives. So that's another favorite of mine.
Of course, I want to mention a couple others. Just King Things, because I'm currently reading through Stephen King books, and this, which is a big inspiration to this podcast, What a Cartoon and Talking Simpsons. Those are really, really terrific. Can't recommend those enough. And we have many friends of the show who have podcasts. Of course, I've been on The Wheel of Scoob, which is a great one. Really love being on that one. And we also have Rage's podcast, which is Podcast 69, which is, I don't know if it's still going, but I mean, the back catalog is there for you to explore. But while Lucas, I mean, I wanted to also support this by looking up what are kind of the top podcasts now, because like I say, I'm not really dialed into the form as it is. And
it's really changed since this episode dropped. And I feel like that's something we're going to get into, is how the medium has changed and evolved since the kind of titular subject of this episode.
So, of course, like the Joe Rogan Experience is number one, like worldwide, essentially. Caller Daddy is another one, and a lot of true crime.
But that's really funny because And I don't mean this. This is an observation. This is not meant to be a slight at either podcast.
Sure.
But Call Her Daddy is basically, like, in my mind, the female Joe Rogan Experience. And the Joe Rogan Experience is essentially the male Call Her Daddy. So it's funny that those are the number one and number two.
Must be serving some kind of need, I guess. And then, of course, the glut of true crime podcasts, which are still going on. Tons of them. This is what we're going to be talking about here. DW is upset because her favorite cereal, Puffy Unicorn Crunch, is not available at the grocery store. But she does manage to find a smaller box in one of those four packs that at our grocery store, those four packs would be Rice Krispies, Frosted Flakes, Corn Pops, and Fruit Loops. So here it's in with a couple of other ones. So she gets this little one, which she's going to save for a special occasion.
Which, do you remember those, Will? This unlocked a memory in my brain. I guess I still see them at the grocery store.
These still exist.
Yeah, I just, like, it's been so long since I've actually purchased one or had one in my possession that I feel like I have horse blinders on when I'm at the grocery store. You know, I'm only looking for my weekly essentials, so I don't even notice them anymore.
Yeah.
But these used to be so exciting to me. I remember we would always get them when we went camping, and we'd actually do the stuff where, because you know how if you cut out the little door in the back, you're supposed to put the milk in the box?
Oh,
use
yeah.
Use the box as a bowl? I don't know, as a child, I remember being so excited for them. Except it would always be Corn Pops, Frosted Flakes, Rice Krispies, and maybe Honey Nut Cheerios.
Fruit Loops?
And Fruit Loops. And as a kid, you know, I was never really allowed to have sugary cereal, so this is another reason why this was so exciting. So, yeah. You know, I would eat the Fruit Loops first, then the Corn Pops, then the Frosted Flakes. Then it was always lame when you only had the Rice Krispies left. Yeah, exactly.
Frosted Flakes were always the one I left to the last because I didn't really like Frosted Flakes when I was a kid.
Frosted Flakes, hot take. Here's a hot take.
Mm.
One of the rare cereals better dry than with milk because with milk, it gets soggy too quickly.
That's true, and the sugar gets all into the milk, which is the idea, but then it gets a little too much for me. While we're on cereals here, so throughout this episode, and especially in this segment here, we see some of the in-universe cereal brands, which some of them are descriptive, some of them aren't. So there's some boxes that we see in the background here. So we have cereal brands like Chester, Yellow, without the W, Biley, B-I-L-Y, and Sugar Max, and then Mom Reed tries to sell DW on prunes and millet husks, and
okay.
Arthur Will. Mentions Odie rings later.
Would you
no.
have prunes and millet husks?
No. Would you?
Okay. First of all, God. Raisin Bran, kind of fire. Okay.
Oh,
can we just acknowledge that Raisin
no.
Bran is low-key fire?
No, I hate raisins.
You
no,
hate
I will not. I will not acknowledge
raisins. There's nothing
raisins.
I can do for you. Okay. Well, as someone who's is raisin positive, I'm all for the. And now I don't really know what a millet husk is, but how bad could it be?
a millet husk. Well, when I Google it. It's like, what are millet hulls? So it's a millet. Millet is a seed. A millet hull is the outer husk of the seed. So it's best known as birds. It's bird seed. It's
cool.
Actual bird seed.
Okay.
No, thank you. No, like, I was gonna ask you if you'd eat it, but you beat me to it, and I should have known that you would at least give it a try. Listen. These days, I'm very boring with cereal. I really don't like the sugary options unless it's specifically for a snack. Like, I'm so old, everybody, that I'm enjoying, like, regular Cheerios.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Cheerios are fire.
But no, they are. They're really good. And listen, like, I'm gonna embarrass myself here for a second. We were spending the weekend at our in-laws, and they had Honey Nut Cheerios. And I had a bowl of them, and I'm like, it's a little too sweet for me,
whoa.
Honestly.
Yeah, you really are getting older. Okay, yeah. This is, again, we got to fill time. No emails this week.
We don't
have
to fill time, but okay.
Do you have a favorite cereal, Will?
Well, so, like, all time, or what?
Yeah, well, right now.
right now.
Like, if I was like, Will, we're going to the grocery store. You can have whatever cereal you want.
Probably Vector.
Wow.
I like Vector.
Will, you know what my dad would literally tell me every single day? Because, I grew up in an ingredients household. We were never allowed to have sugary cereal.
Yes.
So we had a lot of Vector back in the day. And my dad every single day would say, I would say, can I have some cereal, Daddy? He goes, it's not cereal. It's a meal replacement.
That's what my parents would say, too. They'd be like, hey, don't eat too much of that. That's a meal replacement. And it's like, give me a break, please.
I know. That's such, like, it's such marketing. It's like the guy who came up with, it's part of a balanced breakfast.
Yes.
What a funny thing. It's like, if you eat a bunch of healthy stuff and also this, it's like you're eating a meal.
And then in the commercial, it would be like all of the other stuff you should eat with it. So, like,
yeah, exactly.
like waffles, orange juice, milk, fruit, toast, and then the cereal. I'm like, that's a lot to eat, man, for like an 8-year-old kid.
Yeah, that 8-year-old kid's eating Hotel Continental breakfast every single day.
Right. Who has time to do that? What about you?
When you're getting, you got to get to school by 8 a.m. So you're getting up at like what? Like 6:37? My favorite cereal, I mean, I don't get it very often. It's been, you know, I usually get breakfast at work lately, so it's been a while since I've had cereal in the house, but I'm a sucker for CT Crunch. I love Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Oh, the taste you can see.
Exactly. And it's not often that I would get that for breakfast. It's more of a dessert cereal, but it's, I think, the lasting favorite throughout the years.
If you're talking dessert cereal, which I almost never get anymore, I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast. This sounds familiar. I love Cap'n Crunch. I love Cap'n Crunch so much.
Interesting. Iconoclastic choice. You know, people say it cuts the roof of your mouth.
Like, I think we've literally had this same discussion before.
I probably brought up his real name as well, right?
Horatio?
Okay, yeah, you remember.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Anyway, I had to take note of all the cereal brands here. So DW's got her little box of Puffy Unicorn Crunch. By the way, okay, so sorry. This is the tangent I wanted to go off on, Lucas, because DW is realizing the pain of having something that you love being discontinued. Do you have an example of a food or item that you loved that was swiftly discontinued and you can't get anymore?
Ooh, I'd have to think about it. I mean, since we're on the cereal tip, I used to love old Trix as a kid, which were Trix when they were in the little shapes. And now, first of all, Trix went away in Canada for years. You just couldn't get Trix, period. And now the Trix cereal you buy in Canada are like little balls. Where
really?
They used to be different little like fruit shapes.
There was a type of strawberry jam that I got when I was a kid, and so when I was much younger, I had a thing with, like, you know, jams or ice cream or something where it's like if it had fruit bits in it, like, that grossed me out. I didn't like it. And there was this like super duper pureed strawberry jam. It was called, like, I don't know, Fruit Smackers or something, and it was just like pureed strawberry jam, and there's so much sugar in it, I'm sure. I loved it. And then that's like my number one, like, it got discontinued, and I'm like, you mean I can't get it anymore ever? It was such a, the word tragedy is thrown around a lot these days, but I was very sad about it. I recently almost had one because, and listen, I'm not sponsored. I'm not looking to get sponsored. I'm just telling you, Tostitos have that new, like, double scoop thing where it's like it's their scoops, but they're almost in the shape of shell pasta, and it's like twice as thick. I love them. And I briefly had a scare when I went for groceries the other week and they weren't there anymore, but they still exist, so I need to buy them every time I see them to avoid the situation that DW's in here. Puffy Unicorn Crunch, DW has her little box, and she decides that on a random day that she's going to celebrate National Librarians Day. That's the special occasion. National Librarians Day, by the way, is April 16th. So on April 16th, she decides,
right around the corner,
she's going to break open her cereal and eat it, but she finds that it's been stolen out of the box. So that's her cold open. The other part of this episode is that Buster gets introduced to the field of podcasts. from his mom, because Bitsy is enjoying her favorite podcast in Arthur, which is called Real Life Mysteries. And it's hosted by Iron Hunt, who is surely meant to be Ira Glass, probably. And Buster begins to listen to it with her. And it's like, it's kind of like Freaky Stories in podcast form. It's like urban legends and stuff like that. And Buster becomes obsessed with it. He loves it. And to the point where, you know, they finish like a story in this podcast series. And Buster says, I think I've just found what I want to do when I grow up. And I just kind of laughed and was like, yeah, good luck, kid. But Buster decides to create his own podcast, and it's called The Baxter Files. So you mentioned this earlier, Lucas, the interpretation of podcasts here. Of course, this is airing when we are making our podcast, but this was made in the mid-2010s. And as we see, it's based off of a very specific one, which we'll get into in a little bit. The interpretation of podcasts here is the NPR-style story/journalism shows, which I think are not as popular anymore as they were 10 years ago.
That's definitely changed. Well, it's funny, too, because with the Serial was a lot of people's introduction to podcasts as a medium. But podcasts were a lot older, you know.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan had been around for years before Serial. The giant Bombcast, which was my introduction to podcasts. And before that, the Hotspot, the GameSpot podcast, came out long before Serial. And that and Joe Rogan were both more conversational, right?
Yes.
But because so many people kind of latched onto Serial, that was their perception of the genre. And I remember when I was in radio and television school, one of our projects, and this was for the kind of journalism side of it, was to develop a podcast. And mm-hmm. the one that we had put together was a little bit of both. It was like kind of edited and investigational, or if that's not even a word, it was more edited and it was like an investigative. But there was also like a conversation piece at the end, because to me, that's what podcast was, because I'd listened to those other podcasts. And I got docked points by the teacher because they were like, what's with all this kind of meandering conversation at the end? You know, it's supposed to be like a little bit tighter and more edited. And so that really was the popular idea of a podcast. And now, you listed the two most popular podcasts, Call Her Daddy and Joe Rogan. Those are purely interview shows, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like the only ones doing this kind of edited, kind of slick production are either podcasts being put out by radio stations, like if it's a CBC official podcast or an NPR
yes.
official podcast. Those murder podcast people, you know. What's up, my spooky, wookie murder fans? Today we're talking about a grisly crime scene. One of those. Or like, I guess the people who do like actual play podcasts, like people who play like D&D on microphone, they'll sometimes have music or sound effects and stuff like that. So the medium's, you know, it stayed. It did not replace terrestrial radio like some people were talking about it would. But it is kind of grown into its own as its own thing. And really, I feel like Serial and when this episode came out was right around when me and you started Elwood City Limits. And one of the kind of impetuses for this show was both me and you were really obsessed with podcasts and the medium back in the day. And so it's been interesting to watch podcasting as a whole grow along with me and you.
Well, and the type of podcast that we do where we go through a show episodically like and talk about it and review it, either as fans or people who worked on it, came into popularity around when we started it and has only gotten more popular. And there are definitely more podcasts that have been doing it longer than us. So like, for example, as I've said on many places, one of the big inspirations for me to do this podcast was one called Sailor Business, which was doing what we were doing, but with Sailor Moon, or the One Piece podcast, which has been around since the late 2000s, I'm pretty sure, and is still going. Has a similar sort of format, but this has now been adopted by, like I said, Office Girls, talking the cast members from The Office. They did the Zach Braff has one for Scrubs and all these other ones. It's only gotten more popular and more mainstream, like you said, because the form used to be a lot more conversational. The one the first one that I started listening to was Smodcast, Kevin Smith's podcast, which was also happening around the same time as the Giant Bombcast and all those other ones that you mentioned too. And I do want to talk specifically about Serial in just a second when we get there. So Buster's got the Baxter files and his first story ideas. He's just trying to scare up some kind of interest. So he thinks maybe he can talk about the sandwich in his display case. But of course, people can't smell it when they're listening to a podcast. What's the deal with snails and where do they go when they leave their shells? Well, they don't leave their shells. And he also tries to invent a story about Chester, Arthur's identical twin. But it's in presenting that Chester story to Arthur that doesn't go anywhere that he finds out about DW's serial thief. And he decides to do a podcast and call it Serial, which is going to investigate the case with Arthur as the prime suspect, which DW swears up and down that it was Arthur. And of course, this is unmistakably based on Serial. What is slash was Serial? Now, first of all, the Arthur version is spelled C-E-R-E-A-L after the food. The podcast that it's referencing is S-E-R-I-A-L, meaning Serial Storytelling. So Serial, the real life podcast, is a true crime slash investigation podcast that follows one case per season over a series of episodes. It was a spinoff and a co-production of This American Life, which is a popular NPR program. So it debuted in 2014 when this Arthur season probably would have been being worked on. That first season of Serial, hugely popular. And it was even to the point where it was like culturally relevant. Like if you brought up Serial to people you worked with or people you knew, there's a good chance they might know about it. It got news coverage. It got social media traction. It even got like parody videos and podcasts, which to me is a sign.
It was on SNL.
Really, yeah. And like people knew about this and because it was being released episodically, like one episode a week, it really could gain natural momentum and people could jump on. So it had its first season. Then it had its second season in 2015, which was not as well received and effectively ended the show's momentum. It did have a third season in 2018, and it does seem to be still making episodes today. Like, you can still look up Serial on your podcast app, and the show itself ended with its third season, but it's still hosting, like, these season-long documentary-style stories. In a way, it was a bit of a forerunner to the glut of true crime entertainment and content that we have now, because the Serial seasons were about criminal cases and investigations. And its popularity probably caused a lot of people to be like, hey, let's try and do our own investigations. And it had a lot of different spinoffs as well. Like there, we mentioned this recently, like there, one of the spinoffs was called S-Town. And that was also had its own popularity and controversy at the same time. Serial won a bunch of awards itself and was hugely influential, but it's really a marker of the 2010s decade. Like, we're still so close to the 2010s that it's hard to be like, what is the entertainment of this decade? Serial is like a marker of that time, and it's so of the 2010s that it's like this true crime podcast that gained huge popularity and then totally flamed out.
Well, and I have to say, and it's going to be hard to talk about this until we kind of get to the end of the episode, but if you think about this episode of Arthur in the context of Serial mania and everybody talking about Serial,
yeah,
it actually has some pretty nuanced and insightful things to say, not just about podcasting, but about the show Serial specifically.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting because this is the writers kind of talking to the adults in the room or talking to themselves. You know, I don't suspect any 8-year-olds were listening to Serial at the time. And the moral of this episode is kind of directly addressing Serial in a way, which is really interesting. It makes for kind of, I was at the edge of my seat throughout this, being like, wow, they're really saying this with this episode.
Right. So we are going forward with this Serial in the Baxter files. And Buster's podcast begins to gain popularity at school. So everybody is listening to it. He does try to sell it to Binky, which, listen, as a podcaster myself, did feel like, hey, friend that I know isn't interested in Arthur or cartoons, you want to listen to my Arthur podcast? And they're like, yeah, totally. I'll get right on that. And just okay.
Biggie's hilarious. He's like, oh, yeah, maybe if I'm looking for something to fall asleep to.
Right. But as Buster, as the show is growing in popularity, it's also causing Arthur to become increasingly ostracized and very frustrated because everyone thinks he did it. And like you say, Luke, it's like we can talk about it a bit now. So that first season of Serial is about asking a question. It's a bit, it reminds me a bit of like Netflix's Making a Murderer, which is like, which may have been itself inspired by Serial, of like, it was a murder case. And it was like, was this real person a murderer? And I don't think that there were any real like hard conclusions that it came to, even though it seemed to be building to it. But I wrote down here that the way that they talk about this, so essentially, if you've heard Serial before, Arthur is in the Adnan Syed role, where it's like, it seems like he did it. All of the evidence points to him doing it, but we're still not sure. And there's also a little bit of evidence to suggest maybe he didn't. But it also brought a lot of negative attention onto him. And whether or not he deserved it, I don't even know if we're still sure about that here in 2024. But like you say, this is surprisingly sharp and incisive for Serial. One of its lasting critiques is misrepresenting its subjects in the search for the truth. And Buster is such a good character to do this with because we know Buster. He has very good intentions, but he will take things a bit too far. Like, he doesn't realize until it's too late sometimes that he's doing more harm than good. And we see it here with Arthur. Like, kids are like staring him down and don't trust him anymore. And we can at least do this with something that's like, he's not a murderer, but it's just like, but the thing is catching on here at school. And it's a really interesting, like, you would never expect Arthur to be able to or want to say something like this in this way.
Well, and it's funny because I looked up some stuff around Serial because I knew we were going to talk about it for this episode, because I vaguely remembered. I was like, okay, so when the dust settled on everything, yeah, didn't people come away with it being like, yeah, it was really entertaining in the moment, but to call it journalism is kind of, it's too biased. That was the big criticism, right? Is that, you know, whether for better or for worse, the person making Serial kind of had this pre-established narrative in their head, and they were kind of biased towards their narrative and might have suppressed other narratives to the contrary. And that's both because she believed the guy was innocent, but it's also because it was, in a way, a narrative show. It was in an ongoing investigation. And another criticism of Serial was that it kind of has an unsatisfying ending because it ends with a, well, we don't really know what happened and we never will, so, huh. And one of the things that Buster struggles with is when the narrative starts to get away from him, when he starts to discover infallible proof that Arthur is innocent, he's worried that it's going to ruin his compelling narrative when he reveals the truth.
Right.
And so he's kind of wrestling with this, like, well, should I still blame Arthur anyway? Because that makes for a better show.
Yes.
Which is, again, a very kind of biting critique on Serial. And if you think about when the timeline of when this would have came about, it's just like, what good kind of satire of this thing that none of the kids watching is going to pick up on, are going to pick up on.
So yeah, like you said, Lucas, we do eventually discover that Arthur didn't do this. It's actually Pal. So Buster discovers Pal eating from the cereal box under Arthur's bed, but he stashes the evidence and he doesn't tell anyone. And we do have this moment here where Buster has a choice before him. Like you said, he considers that he could just lie to continue the story, and he almost does. But his guilt is too much for him. He doesn't want to make Arthur seem guilty. He knows that doing that would be wrong. We do even see him imagining, like, okay, what would happen if I did tell the truth? And he imagines the backlash he would get for an unsatisfying ending, which, like you said, also happened with Serial. So we see all the kids come up to him in the cafeteria, and Francine says, I want my money back. And Buster says, but it was free. And then Francine's like, you should pay us for wasting our time. And all of this feels like, yeah, I'm sure the people who run Serial got this times 10, like no doubt. And this, and these are critiques that you would get still today. And it is really, really well thought out there. So Buster considers it and then he decides against it. And the final narration that he gives on the whole thing is, it's funny. You mentioned in your project how you ended it off with like a little bit of a little bit of semi-related chat. And it's like Buster giving this very on the nose navel gazing narration I wrote, like, because that's how all the serial episodes would end. It'd be like Sarah Koenig being like, but who is a murderer? And who are we, if not the accomplices to this murder, or something like that? And Buster does that a little bit, but he is, like you said, wrestling with the idea that he could lie and make a better story, but isn't it more important to tell the truth, even if it isn't that interesting? And yeah, he eventually publishes that version of it, and it ends up pretty positively. Arthur is cleared. Like, we see him listening to the podcast, him and DW, and his name is cleared, and everybody listening to the podcast seems to have enjoyed it. Buster doesn't really get any criticism. In fact, Arthur's very complimentary of the series as well. And the final scene is that even Binky is listening to it after being like, yeah, maybe I'll use it to fall asleep to. He's actually catching up to the Baxter Files now, and he runs away with his hands over his ears so he doesn't get spoiled. So it ended up being a good decision for Buster to tell the truth, which isn't such a clean ending for the podcast that it's parodying in real life, but I think is a good message. So let's go back here, first of all, to Fern's Flights of Fancy. Lucas, what'd you think of that episode?
I thought Fern's Flights of Fancy was really good. I think the big standout section, of course, is the story within the story. That's the part that I'm going to remember, and that's going to be the kind of lasting thing about that episode that sets it apart from other episodes. But also, I really liked the moral of the episode, that even if you try to do something creative and it's not perfect the first time, or it doesn't reach the success you thought it was going to be the first time, it is a shame to just abandon it. I know people in my personal life who have, you know, applied for art school or something, and they were so kind of downtrodden being rejected that they essentially gave up art for the rest of their life and didn't learn to get back into it until years later. And so this is a really important moral for kids to be learning. And I think it does it in a way that's interesting and not heavy-handed.
I agree. I really liked this episode. Thankfully, Fern gets a really good one, and I'm glad, because she deserves all the good ones. For the same reasons you said, great message, something that kids could do well to internalize. As I mentioned, I'm somebody who gets very frustrated in this similar sort of way, but seeing it play out like this makes you realize how silly that frustration can be if it keeps you from doing something that you truly enjoy. And while it's a little bit thin, I suppose, in terms of, like, because, like I said, that animated segment takes up a lot of the episode. And the George doing what he did without Fern's permission is a little weird, but I think ultimately I don't have that much of a problem with it, that it would ruin the episode. And it's good to see Fern go through kind of the creative process in this way. And I really responded to that personally quite well. There were some good lines in there. Loved the animated segment. Yeah, no, I really like this too. And I would say that, like, I hope I'm not being too reactive here in terms of, like, we're just talking about it here and I'm thinking about it and I'll revisit this. But I think that serial, in the sense that how well it responded to something topical of its time, this is one of the best Arthur episodes that we've seen in a long time. Like, not to downplay, like, the good Arthur episodes that we've seen in the seasons we've been covering, but every once in a while, and I'm really, really thankful that Arthur can still knock it out of the park like this, we get an episode of this level of quality. I loved this. I think this is a fantastic episode, both for the fact that it is a really, not just like a funny parody of something that really exists, but also one that is thoughtful and has something to say about the thing that it's parodying, which you don't expect from a cartoon show for children. But also the fact that it's a really good lesson and it's a good character to be wrestling with this. Like I said, Buster is the type of person to let things get away from him because he gets a bit of success, or because he gets too excited about something, or he wants something to be true. Buster's character is constantly like at odds with and interrogating the truth in a way. And that's what he's doing here. And they do it in a way that doesn't make it, that doesn't seem like he comes to a conclusion because the episode has to end. But they actually like feels like he gets a lot enough time to go over it and become a better person because of it. And I just like, from what we were able to talk about it, and I hope it's clear why, and certainly you should watch it if you haven't watched it yet, but like, yeah, I thought this episode was fantastic.
It's difficult because this episode is really loaded, right? In terms of, I remember when we first started the podcast, one of the first emails we ever got was, hey, in the new season of Arthur, they made an episode about podcasting. Gonna be great to hear you guys talk about that. Fast forward like 6 years, and here we are. So lots of expectations in this one. And also, you know, this moment in time in early 10s, late aughts history, where podcasting was coming into its own, going mainstream, so to speak, and podcasting was on everyone's lips. And it's one of the reasons why me and you decided to take up these microphones and eventually do this. It's a pretty important moment in you and I's origin story. And so I just want to be careful because there's kind of an implicit bias here where I think about...
That's true.
You know, does this episode work for someone who has no context watching it in a vacuum? But at the end of the day, that's not what we're talking about here today, Will. We're talking about how you and I felt about it. And I have to say, I had some, you know, worries going in. I was like, all right, let's see how Arthur tackles this whole thing called podcasting. Because I feel like podcasting's like comic books or something else. Whenever shows tackle it, they have just as much chance to get it wrong as they do getting it right and having kind of a accurate tribute. And I was pretty, I gotta say, blown away by how well this episode is tackling, not podcasting as a whole, but this specific moment in podcasting. And not only that, the insightful things it had to say. How it wasn't just parroting Serial and being like, hey, remember this show? It was also kind of doing a critique of Serial in a way that's only aged better with hindsight. And so that really impressed me. And it got me thinking that, wow, they still really have it with Arthur. And like you said, Will, it's hard for this not to be kind of a standout episode in the Arthur canon, especially in the Elwood City Limits Arthur canon, given the subject matter. So I similarly was kind of blown away by it.
I'm glad we're in agreement. And this is, it's so nice. Like every once in a while, and sometimes when we need it the most, we get an episode that's just like, this is why we're here. This is why we're talking about this. It is that level of good. I want to quickly throw it now to somebody who has been asking to talk about this episode for a while. Somebody who has emailed into the show before, and I would like to feature his comments here. This is what ECL listener Carter Logie feels about the episode we just watched.
Hi, Will Young. Hi, Lucas Mancini. Hi, Elwood City Limits listeners. My name is Carter Logie, and it's nice to be on Elwood City Limits. I was diagnosed and tested for autism spectrum disorder when I was 2 years old. So there are things I like writing and drawing, Arthur, and pepperoni pizza. And things I don't like bugs, loud noises, and orders on trying new foods, which I am trying to get used to a little. In the future, I want to become a children's author and illustrator like the creator of Arthur, Mark Brown. And hopefully in early 2025, I'll self-publish my first book. Mark Brown and Arthur is why I want to become a children's author and illustrator. Mark Brown is my idol. And my experience with Arthur, I seen Arthur around when I was born, I started to learn about Arthur and Mark Brown. I learned about how he made the Arthur books and television show, and there's toys and CD-ROMs we grew up with, other Arthur merchandise, and website with games and activities, and I know there will also be a potential Arthur feature film. I was born in the year when Arthur aired season 7. That was Jason Schwimmer's first season voicing DW. I also learned about the Elwood City Limits podcast. Will Young, Lucas Mancini, you both did a great job on the podcast. Great job interviewing Dallas Jokic and Jason Schwimmer and lots of other guest hosts for your show. For my point of view of Fern's Flights of Fancy, here's some things I want to note. The first thing is, I never thought Buster would offer Fern to sit at his table to talk about news about a young writer's contest. Then Francine said she could be famous. I entered an art contest organized by Prestige Kia in Eau Claire. It's called the Prestige of Art and Community Contest. I tried winning the contest, but I didn't win. Sorry. It's surprising to see that Mark Brown would appear in Arthur's world as an aardvark. My point of view on the Word From Us Kids segment, the class having a writing challenge sounds a little bit like something I did at the Boys and Girls Club. We were writing posters about different authors, including Mark Brown. The kids finding A rhymes and B rhymes, sometimes writing is hard to do. My first point of view in cereal, DW really likes her cereal, the Puffy Unicorn Crunch, but sometimes they ran out in the supermarket. When you keep buying your favorite thing and not something else, you either have to buy something different or get your favorite thing in a different size. I never celebrated National Librarians Day, but it sounds cool. Never thought Buster could start a podcast at a young age. I mean, there are some kids who started a podcast at a young age. Pretty sure some kids do all that. It's good he decided to do one about DW's serial mystery. My thoughts on Fern's Flights of Fancy. I really like this episode. It shows that Fern likes writing stories, and even when she enters the contest, even though she lost. But just because you lost something doesn't mean you should give up something you really like to do. Thankfully, she has her friend George, who's always there to make sure she doesn't give up on writing. It's hard to win everything, but even though you didn't win the contest, it doesn't mean you should give up on something you really like to do. That happened to me for that Prestige Art Contest. My thoughts on Serial. I like this episode too. It shows Buster doing a podcast to solve a case of DW's Serial, and DW thinking it was Arthur who did it, and Buster getting popular, but Arthur is embarrassed. And when Buster found out it was Pal who ate them, he leaves a spoiler, and now Arthur is happy for him. And I'm happy for both of them too. So where could people find me? I don't have social media yet. I hope to get social media for my future business of being a children's author and illustrator. But I'd say you could follow my work at Ellie Phillips Career Development Center on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Ellie Phillips CDC, Instagram, instagram.com/ElliePhillipsCDC, Facebook, facebook.com/ElliePhillipsCDC, Pinterest, pinterest.com/LECDCEauClaire. Their YouTube channel is, I think it's youtube.com/LEPhillipsCareerDevelopmentCenter. And the website is www.lecdc.org. I'll be having some more creative ideas for the CDC on social platforms. Ellie Phillips Career Development Center is going to be turning 65 this year, and we'll be doing something really cool for that. So stay tuned for that. And for me, Carter Loggy, thanks for listening, Elwood City Limits listeners.
Thank you, Carter. Really appreciate your words there, and sorry to keep you waiting on that. Well, Lucas, that's it for this episode here of Elwood City Limits. Man, didn't expect to be starting this day with, like an all-timer Arthur episode, but I'm so glad that we did. And it has further reinvigorated me as we go along here. Not that, you know, not that anything was really going to stop us, but man, it's it much in the same way that starting the season where we started the podcast felt like a full circle moment. So does this in covering the podcasting impact on the popular show that we're covering. So really appreciated your thoughts on that, Lucas, and would love to hear from everyone listening as well. Whether you're a patron or whether you're listening on the free feed, don't forget you can contact us, elwoodcitylimits@gmail.com. And patrons, at the end of this month, we are going to be dipping back into For the Kids, our podcast about other kids' shows not named Arthur. And we're going to be talking about Bob the Builder, which has been requested for quite some time. And we're finally going to be getting around to this. Bob the Builder, you know, never really interacted with it. I'm very curious to find out more about it and to, like, see what all the hubbub has been about for all these years. So patrons can expect that.
We're finally going to answer the immortal question. Can he fix it, Will?
I don't know. I really don't know. It's, you know, maybe the episode we picked is the one where he doesn't fix it. We'll have to see. And then on the next episode of Elwood City Limits, we're going to be talking about He Said, He Said, and Bunny Trouble. Certainly hope that we can continue the streak that we got in this episode, but this is also a lot to live up to. So if it doesn't quite come up to the heights of Serial, I can't exactly hold that against it. Well, thanks everybody for listening to this episode of Elwood City Limits. My name's Will Young, and for Lucas Mancini...
Don't do it, Bob! He's a brain-sucking mutant!
We'll see you next time.